you all. So I'm Jenny Lyon. For those of you who don't know me, I'm the Senior Vice President of the Institute and delighted to be able to chair this session, which is called Branching into Banking. We've got two great speakers who are going to share some of their thoughts about their own careers and what it's like to work in banking. We're going to have questions at the end of the session, so we'll have a presentation from Michael and then from Nicolette, and then we'll have half an hour for questions, so you know, plenty of time for us to pick their brains. So first I'll introduce Michael. He's the Executive General Manager of Corporate Financial Services for the Commonwealth Bank. He's responsible for providing banking products and services to business clients, typically ranging in turnover from 10 million to 500 million. He previously spent 6 years as EGM of Retail Products and Customers for CBA and was responsible for the bank's portfolio of personal banking products, including home loans, deposits, and transaction accounts. And before that, he was CFO for the Wealth Management Division, including the bank's funds management, Colonial First State, and insurance, the Common Shore businesses. So if you could welcome Michael, thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. A privilege to be here. It's always nice when you get an opportunity to reflect a little on your career, because you don't always get that. So I thought nice opportunity for me to just share with you some of the reflections of my career, and in particular how I ended up in banking. I've spent the last 10 years or so in banking roles. I've had 16 years at the Commonwealth Group, the first 5 or 6 in insurance and funds management roles, the last 10 years in banking. Let me just take 5-10 minutes, give you a quick snapshot, some of my reflections on some of the critical junctures of how I ended up where I did. And then Nicolette's also going to do some reflections on hers, and then between us, hopefully field some questions from the floor, except for Mark Hancock. I won't spend too much time on the sort of the early stage of the career, other than to say I started my career at Towers Perrin and Tillinghast. So I spent the first 7 years. My personal observations was consulting is a fantastic background to start your career in. You're thrown at the deep end very early. You get a wide variety of things to do, client interaction from a pretty early stage, and exposure to, you know, to senior management, I think much earlier that I've observed in some instances for people that come through a corporate line. So for me, you know, that was a fantastic early part of my career. And one of the themes as I talk through this is, I guess I've made conscious decisions at certain junctures in my career around what I wanted to do next. And I didn't necessarily say it had to be X or Y, but I had a rough, you know, idea of what I did want to do and what I didn't want to do. And having spent the first 7 years in consulting, and I loved it, and I had a wonderful mentor under Mark Turner for much of that time. But I also got to a point and said, look, if I spend the next 5 years here, I'm probably going to spend the next 10 or 15 years. So I made a very conscious decision that I wanted to move out into a corporate role, and joined a company called Australian Casualty and Life, which was a small and specialist risk insurer. That was at a time, I guess, where the life companies were a bit of all things to all people, and ACNL was quite a unique beast in that it focused only on pure risk insurance. That's probably more the norm now, but 15, 20 years ago, that was quite unique. And for me, I wanted to move out of the consulting environment and actually get involved and part of being a business and involved in running a business. So that was a very conscious decision. Deliberately went into a role that had a combination of finance and actuarial. So it was a general manager who had both the finance and actuarial function. And again, for me, that was probably a first step for me in trying to broaden my career outside the actuarial. So I found a role that would allow me to leverage that strength, but at the same time, add some other strings to the bow. Had the opportunity to sit on that was a reasonably small business, the opportunity to sit on the leadership team of that business, and again, a lot of exposure to things at a pretty early stage in the career that were outside my technical training, but a wonderful learning opportunity. I then got another fantastic opportunity in that business, having been the general manager of finance and actuarial there for 3 years. The previous managing director left, and I unexpectedly, this wasn't a planned thing, had the opportunity to step into the role as running that business at a relatively young stage of my career. I was probably in my early 30s at that time, and I'd have to say probably that I did that for 2.5 years. It was probably the biggest learning curve in my career to be in charge of a business around 200 people, particularly the emphasis on the sort of sales and marketing side, which, you know, is critical in any insurance company, but I hadn't had any background in that side of it. So, you know, you are thrown at the deep end, and it was, you know, I'd say probably the fastest learning curve in my career in terms of just having exposure to a different set of issues, different group of people, different leadership style to everything that I'd probably been trained in the actuarial side, which translated reasonably well into the broader finance function. But then to you know, be looking at the sort of sales and marketing side of the business was a big challenge and a real big learning experience. From there, again, I made another very conscious decision that I'd spent the first 10 or 12 years in my career in the insurance environment, or insurance and superannuation, but particularly insurance with Tillinghast and then ACNL. And I looked at the financial services landscape and sort of said, look, you know, insurance, you know, probably for me, I didn't think that was the main game at an industry level. And therefore made a conscious decision to get into a different part of the industry, but one I thought I could transfer my skill sets for, and that's when I joined Colonial First State, really high growth company at that point, still is, fantastic reputation at the time, was a great place to work, and, you know, and still is. And for me, I sort of took the opportunity to move into something, again, quite different to what I'd done. Ran for 2 or 3 years the role running distribution, basically dealing with the financial planners that were selling retail funds management product, but also the institutional side of the business. So again, another big learning curve. It's something that I thoroughly enjoyed. When I joined Colonial First State, it was about 6 weeks after the Commonwealth Bank had bought Colonial. So I actually joined very consciously. One of the attractions for me that was part of a broader group. Did I have at the time a stated desire to say I'm going to work in banking? No. Did I think from a career perspective that was a big plus to be part of a bigger organisation that was going to potentially offer me career opportunities? Yes. So I guess that was the decision, you know, that in terms of my subsequent career in banking all stemmed from joining Colonial First State, which wasn't a conscious decision to get into banking, but I saw it as a real positive to be part of a broader group. Colonial First State, as I'm sure Nicolette was shared, was at that time extremely separate to CBA. So while you were working in that business, you really had little or nothing to do with the bank. And I got an opportunity to take on the CFO role within the bank's broader wealth management business. And I was a little, personally a little hesitant, probably about having made conscious decisions to broaden my career outside of the traditional sort of finance and actuarial background. But I was persuaded to do that, and it was, again, a really good move for me, because what it did, it gave me a lot of exposure to the rest of the group, not just the bank's broader wealth management businesses, but that was probably my first interaction with my CFO colleagues in the retail bank and the business bank and, you know, the group treasury and the group finance functions. So, again, through that role, I started to get a taste of the rest of the group. And I then had it's funny how these things work out. I did that role for nearly 3 years and was ready to do something different. Was pretty open to where that might be. Certainly wanted to get back into a business role. But I could have just as easily been a business role in the wealth management. But as it panned out, the group CFO at the time, who I'd got to know reasonably well in my wealth days, was Michael Cameron. As you probably know Michael, or know of Michael, he'd actually just moved over to run the retail bank. And I knew Michael reasonably well from my time in the CFO, and it, just as things worked out, you know, he had a role going in the retail bank, which was looking after all the product side of it. So, again, it's interesting how things pan out. That was as much around having a personal relationship with someone, and then a career opportunity came from that. So
Someone giving me the wind up.
And I had, from an actuarial perspective, a great role model in terms of moving into that role. So my predecessor, in fact, we overlapped a little bit in terms of our portfolios, was Jeff Austin, who some of you will know. Had a very good career at the bank in a variety of different roles, but he, in some respects, carved a little bit of a path out for me in terms of having done a major product role in the retail bank before me. So one of my reflections having moved into banking is, you know, it is in many respects, you know, the industry knowledge that you go into it with, you know, relative to either all your training in insurance and superannuation, or that's what I did, and some in investments, but, you know, very little at the time in banking. So it was a pretty foreign world to me. The core of your analytical and your financial stuff travels with you, but you do really, you know, I found the need to learn almost a whole new industry, just the way the dynamics worked, the way pricing operates, even the jargon and the technology, the terminology is quite different. So what you might call, you know, so even just in the, you know, the credit world, you know, your PDs or probability defaults and loss given defaults and all the jargon that you need to get your mind around, which is second nature if you grow up in banking, is brand new if you come from outside the industry. Not difficult concepts, but it's just anything we need to get your mind around it. But one of the things I quickly learned is if you take the time to really learn it, and I did, when you're in something and you haven't worked in it, you do take the time. And I did a lot of diving in to really understand how some of the credit models worked and how the transfer pricing worked, and spent a lot of time with colleagues and peers in Treasury to understand how the balance sheet worked, that A, you can quickly get yourself up to speed, but also a lot of people that have probably been in the industry 20 years actually haven't dug as deep on some of those things because they've just taken that stuff for granted. So I found reasonably quickly over probably a two-year period, you know, I've been able to get my depth of knowledge in those things, I thought, to a level that was you know, pretty strong relative to others that had sort of grown up with that. And that was a very conscious effort to invest time. And it's amazing too how perceptions... Once you've been in a role in an organisation for a period of time, I reckon it's about 2 years, anyone that comes into that organisation or deals with you and hasn't dealt with you in a past life just assumes you've been doing that for the last 20 years. So, you know, while I might have only been in retail banking for 2 years looking after the product side of it, but I reckon by then 90% of the people that I was working with had just assumed that all this is what you've done all your career. So it actually is amazing how quickly you, with a bit of time and effort and commitment, how you can... you know, transfer what's seen as your area of expertise. So I had 6 years in that role, running all the products in the retail bank. It's been my favourite role throughout my career. A huge variety in the role, high involvement across the bank, the product role in banks, and I know some of you work in banks, you're touching and involved in many things. Was at a time that our retail banking business was doing exceptionally well. It was a really interesting external environment with the GFC. So a lot of great learnings for me and a wonderful time. But and from there, I used that as a springboard to say, well, while I'm loving this role, you can't do any role forever. So again, made another very conscious decision in my career to learn about a different part of the group, which was business banking. And that's what I've been doing the last 3 years, running the corporate financial services or corporate banking part of our business banking operation. Again, very different type of clientele, you know, business clients, and for me, it's pretty large established businesses. It's a totally relationship managed business. The focus on credit in our business is not a analytical based credit, it's an individual assessment of each client. And it's a much more high touch business compared to most of the businesses that I've worked in, whether it be insurance, funds management, or retail, which were much more mass in nature. So again, something that I've really, really enjoyed, and the opportunity to lead a frontline part of the business again challenges you in a, you know, your own personal development in quite a different way. So, just a couple of sort of closing reflections on the journey to date, and probably trying to link the two about the actuarial background and the last 10 years in banking. I certainly think many of the skills that I learnt, both in my training and qualifying and in the early stage of the career, are very transferable into banking. But if I didn't have a willingness
to try different things and to put myself and to actually make conscious steps to do anything different, I don't think it would have happened. So skill set, yes, but needs to be the desire. I think throughout the importance of having the odd sponsor in your career who's willing to push you into a different area and take a punt on you is important. I touched on the challenge, I think, of lack of industry knowledge, you know, in banking. And again, I'm not sure if it's too different today, but, you know, banking was not a large part of the curriculum when I studied, and I did find that one of the more challenging things. And because people assume when you take a role that you've got a base level of expertise in how the industry works. One of the things I thought, you know, in my training, it did extremely well in insurance and superannuation and investments, that you actually went in a role and you actually had a reasonable grounding. And I didn't feel that my training was setting me up for that same success, and I had to learn that on my own. But as with any role, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's your more general management and leadership skills that for me have been the key success factors. And look, actuarial roles to me in banking, there is a need, you can use it as I have, probably for a springboard for general management roles, but there are also a lot of, you know, quite technical and senior technical roles within the bank that I think, you know, there are some actuaries represented in our organisation and elsewhere in the industry, but I think the representation of the profession in some of those technical roles in banking is not nearly as high as it could be, because the core skill set, I think, is fundamentally very, very similar. So I might pause there and look forward to coming back afterwards and hearing some questions. Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you, Michael. I hope Mark's working on some very tricky questions for you, having been told he couldn't ask any. So I'd like to introduce Nicolette now. Nicolette's the director of UniSuper. And before that, she was general manager at Colonial First State, a director of ASFA, and vice president at VT. She's got a high industry profile, regular presenter and media commentator, including at three actuarial conferences. She's also been a member of council for the Institute since the beginning of this year and is about to launch a book. So you can talk to her about that. Anyway, thank you, Nicolette.
Thanks for the plug, Jenny. wait a minute, I've got to do this first. Now, one of us was actually listening to the instructions. Hover. Good. Good afternoon, everyone. So when I think about my career and how I ended up working for a bank, there was really four key themes. Resilience, luck, flexible working, and following my instincts. So I ended up in banking a lot like Michael, not by design, but by a sort of evolutionary process. So I'm going to take a bit of liberty, and I'm actually going to go back to the very beginning. I'm sort of hoping that it will add a bit of colour and context to this conversation, and at the very least explain my accent. So I grew up in the northeast of England, and I lived there until I was 12, and then my family emigrated to South Africa. So I did my high school in Durban, and I think my parents harboured this desire for me to be a lawyer, but by the age of 15, it was quite apparent that that was not the right vocation for me. So my mum sent me to a counsellor at school, and the counsellor said to me, "What do you like?" I said, "Maths." And she sort of took out this little pocketbook of careers and seemingly opened it on the letter A and said, "What about actuary?" And proceeded to read out a little paragraph that said something about probability theory, math, statistics, well respected and well paid. And, you know, I said, "That sounds good." And spent the rest of the next 10 years of my life, you know, trying to qualify as an actuary on the basis of that 5 minutes of so-called guidance. I'm sure some of you got similar stories about how you ended up here. Anyway, I went to the University of Cape Town, which was heaven on earth, had a great time there. And just another bit of background, I struggled quite a bit with my part one subjects. I had to read, or what's now known as part one, I had to redo a couple of them, Whereas what's now known as the part three subjects, I found I passed those first time, admittedly with a lot of work. But it just gives you a bit of background as to my own capabilities, which is I'm not a deeply technical actuarial type. Anyway, I went on to get my first job, which was at Metropolitan Life in South Africa. But I was only there for about 18 months. I'd met my husband at university, and then we decided to emigrate to Australia. So that is when I joined Towers Perrin. And 1993, that was when Australia was in the midst of a recession. So it was actually hard to get jobs at the time. Anyway, I was very happy for my job at Towers Perrin. That's where I first met Jenny, and Michael was there at Tillinghast at the time as well, interestingly. You'll see a lot of familiar logos there. You might actually draw a conclusion from this that how to get into banking is... anyway, that would be erroneous analysis. So I did get an excellent foundation in superannuation there, but after 5 years it became quite apparent that valuing defined benefit funds was not my thing. Now, there's a bit of irony in there because, as Jenny said, I'm now a director of UniSuper, which is actually one of the only open defined benefit funds in the country. So by this stage, I was having a bit of a career crisis. So I was really wondering if the whole actuary thing was really for me. I remember very seriously contemplating whether I should become a school teacher. And anyway, I started to look around at what the roles were available. And I was particularly drawn to product development and roles in retail investment and retail superannuation funds management. And I took a role working for Advanced Funds Management, developing a wrap product for them. And that was a really new area at the time, you know, really exciting actually. So big learning curve, but I was quite unlucky. They went on to buy Asgard, which was the biggest wrap product in the country at the time. So my project went up in smoke within about 6 months. So with the messiness of that acquisition and my job in limbo, I sort of started thinking, okay, what am I going to do now? I had a friend working at BT, and he said they were looking for somebody to do choice of fund. So, again, product development. Again, a nice, exciting area. Sort of applied for the job and got it. Again, quite a steep learning curve, and again, not so lucky. So within 6 months of starting that job, the choice of fund legislation was deferred for 3 years. So that job went up in smoke as well. But I stayed on at BT and I worked in product development. And that's when I got my first really lucky career break. They offered me a role heading up the product management area at BT. So that was all of the product managers who managed, you know, there's one for managed funds, retail super, corporate super, margin lending, wholesale, private investment division. So that really gave me the groundwork for my career in strategy because it forced me to think across the market and it forced me to understand the competitive dynamics in each part of that market. And it was a full-on role. I was a bit like Michael was saying, that was the role that I was really thrown in at the deep end. It was my first attempt at managing people. It was a team of only about 16 people, but about half of them left within 3 months of me taking over the role. But probably even more challenging was actually, it was really a pure marketing role. And I had no background really in marketing. I'd studied a six-month course at university. So the team was responsible for all the communication material, all the PDSs, anything that went out. And again, it became quite apparent that my sort of lack of real ability in writing, despite the fact that I've written a book, but I'm not actually a great writer. Anyway, that became quite apparent at that stage. And in the midst of this, I did a part-time MBA through the AGSM over 3 years, and I did it together with my husband. And there's another story in that. I then got my next lucky break, which was I got a call from a headhunter about a general manager of strategy role reporting to Chris Cuff at Colonial First State. Now, Chris was and is a revered leader in the industry, you know, deeply respected and admired. So I really jumped at that opportunity. And Michael actually interviewed me for that role. And we ended up working together at Colonial First State for a couple of years on the same management team. So that's where our paths crossed again. So there weren't many strategy roles at the time. That was, I couldn't think of any other strategy roles working in superannuation or funds management. It was one of the first. As Michael said, Colonial First State was very separate from CBA. It had just come across as part of the Colonial Bank acquisition, separate brand. We were located separately, separate culture, and separate brand, obviously. By the time I left CBA, though, Colonial First State is simply another division of the bank. And we very much thought of ourselves as part of the bank. So I spent more than 10 years in that strategy role. I was also responsible for advocacy. So that's the government lobbying and the working with FSC, ASFA, FPA, around superannuation policy. My super, FOFA, FSI all came in as part of that. And a real highlight was that time spent on the ASFA board as the retail director for 8 years. And during that time, I also had my three children. So I worked flexibly and part-time for a lot of that time. So then I got another great opportunity, and I'm sort of at this point. Oopsie, that was a mistake. Damn, I was having such a good record in that. An intentional stuff up. I pressed the wrong button, I was trying to do the thing. So I'm now here, and I got offered a role. So Annabelle Spring had taken over as the group executive for wealth management and really had redone the strategy at that stage. The retirement opportunity was a key part of that wealth strategy, and she wanted someone to lead that across wealth. So I took that opportunity, and it was fantastic. I was really given a blank sheet of paper, so we had a very broad approach. It was the product side, longevity products, capital protection. But digital, marketing, distribution, we tried to make sure we covered the whole spectrum. And that's when I really started working very closely with the bank. So working with them, looking at it from a bank customer's point of view, what are their retirement needs, working with their segmentation analysis, their research department, working directly with the bank's branches, so how do we train up the branch staff to be able to talk about retirement, working in with their marketing campaigns, how do I get retirement on an ATM screen, for example, and most importantly, integrating with some of the bank's digital initiatives and programs. So it goes without saying that the banks are the real powerhouses of our economy. They are some of our biggest companies and our most, I think they're really exciting places to work. I really enjoyed my time working with the bank. I was very impressed at the, particularly, in the later years, the depth of capability and the talent within the bank. And when I think about why it was successful, and I do go back to a sort of strategic mindset, but CBA had really set the strategy, which was securing and enhancing the financial well-being of our customers. And that's what really got everyone on board, in that you have to bring wealth and banking together to deliver on that vision. Anyway, I really enjoyed that retirement role, but I had also been thinking about what is my next career move. And along the way, I'd actually spoken to some very inspiring and successful directors. And I did think that's something that suits my skill set. And then an opportunity came up at UniSuper, which was again with Chris Cuff, who I have to thank for that. So for those of you who don't know, it's a large superannuation fund for the university staff. And I know there's probably some members in the room. I'm not looking at anyone in particular. But it has actually won three of the major superannuation awards, all three of them, this year already. So it's a great fund. Anyway, from a directorship point of view, it's very early days for me. I'm really busy building up a small portfolio of directorship positions. Coming back to the key themes and just trying to summarise. So luck, I think I had four lucky career breaks. The head of product management at BT, the strategy role at Colonial First State, and then the retirement role working across wealth, and then, you know, making this sort of jump between executive roles and non-executive roles to UniSuper has been the last one. Resilience is a key thing for me. I think changing countries when I was younger did help me build that resilience. And, you know, when I think about my two jobs imploding, again, early on in my career, I feel like I bounced back quite well from those. Flexible working. So I worked for more than 12 years, a lot of that part-time and a bit of it what I would describe as flexible working. And following my instinct, and Michael picked up on this as well, which is knowing when the job isn't right or isn't continuing to excite you, and taking very active steps to change course. So I think I was quite good at looking at where there was opportunity, where there was growth, and trying to position myself on the right wave. So it has been a great ride on those waves. As you can see, it has been very much more by evolution than by design. I'm very excited about my new career, but I would also highly commend a career in banking. I think it's fantastic. Thank you very much.
That's all right. Thanks, Nicolette. Okay, I'm going to open it up for questions. We've got about half an hour, so plenty of time if you... Yep, thank you. Who would like to start? Thank you.
Just out of curiosity, what's your view on the level of recognitions of actuaries in banking industry? So do you see actuaries being well-recognised, not so well-recognised in banking? And do you see any advantages, disadvantages, or just neutral carrying the credentials of actuaries in banking industry?
Look, my answer, it by nature, has to be a generalisation. I think the technical skills would be well-acknowledged in a small number of areas, certainly in some of the areas of the risk management, the capital management, some of our pricing analytics area in the Commonwealth Bank. I think the actuarial skills would be well sought after and recognised. Beyond that, in the more generalist roles, it comes down to the capability of the individual and, you know, the people will be known for, you know, their more broader-based things, and whether their background was an actuarial, an accounting or a lawyer, it will be, you know, largely, you know, irrelevant. So I think in certain technical disciplines, professions well, you know, well regarded, there's those profession or those roles in the bank can be springboards into other things, but I think it really just comes down to the capability and the desire of the individual rather than a qualification sort of automatically saying, yeah, you'll be really good in a product role. I don't know about Paul and Nick comment, but there's people in the audience that have a view of that as well.
Yeah, so, and I would be slightly more positive than Michael. So I think it brought me a lot of credibility, actually. I think it is well recognised. It's quite amazing how often it comes up in a meeting. You'll be in a meeting and someone will say, she's an actuary, and suddenly it buys you this instant credibility. Often when it's not relevant to the context at all, you might be in a marketing meeting. But I do think it is well recognised, and it does, I think it does get you a bit of credibility. Any comments on that in the audience?
No. Paul? Yeah.
I'll just add, I think a lot of the time, I think people don't know. And whether that's because people deliberately don't want to say that they're an actuary or whether it's just not something that's discussed. But I think when it is recognised, it does give you that credibility, technical credibility. But I think it could be better promoted, both individually and by the group.
Thanks, Paul. I've got a question up the back here.
Thanks. Hello. So this one's for Michael. So I was quite intrigued by your tenure in certain periods around ballpark 3 years, sometimes six. But I had a question around that need to do something different. Do you have any specific tips or advice on what you went through in terms of what your approach was to One, know when, and two, and where.
I think the when, it will vary from, you know, and as you see, you know, sometimes to me it was 3 years, other times, it, you know, it was as long as 6.5 years in the retail bank. So I think it's a function of, A, are you enjoying the role, B, are you being challenged in the, you know, in the role. I think the what next for me, one of the things I've always made a conscious effort to do is if I'm moving into something different, always try and leverage something that's a strength from before. You know, so, you know, yes, when I went into retail banking, I'd never had that before, but I went into it in a function that I thought having some sort of product management, you know, I had a bit of product management background before, and I thought that's where the, you know, analytic and actuarial training is probably going to count for more than versus in some other banking roles. You know, when I went out of consulting, you know, into in insurance, you know, I went into an area where I had a technical discipline. When I went from insurance to Colonial First State, you know, I might say, well, but I actually went somewhere where I was dealing with advisor distribution, which I'd been familiar with on the insurance side. So I sort of, part of my pitch in the people, because they're going to take a punt on you about taking a new role, I always like to sort of come back and be able to show, here's a core of things that I've demonstrated in previous roles that can be transportable. And, you know, when people ask me that question about, think people are thinking of doing something different in their own careers, I actually ask people to think about what's the core that, you know, if you're in a role and you want to move laterally, what's the core of the skill set that you're going to leverage off to be successful in the new role, and how are you going to be able to demonstrate that to your prospective, you know, new manager, that while you mightn't look exactly what they thought they were going to hire, you're able to demonstrate that you've got the core skill set to do the job.
Sorry, Nicolette, you mentioned instinct on the same wavelength. Did you have any particular anything to add?
It's interesting when you're in a job and you start to think, I'm not enjoying this anymore, or, and then, you know, partly it's your instinct meeting opportunity, because, you know, I think that there was times when I probably sat in a job for 2 years thinking this is wrong, but there was no obvious opportunity to leverage. You know, Michael talked about the move to Colonial First State, which was quite a big move. He went into a distribution role. For an actuary to go into a distribution role is almost unheard of. But you know, there was a particular opportunity around that. And equally, when I moved across to Colonial First State, you know, it was a headhunter calling me, and I was starting to think, you know, I'm enjoying this product management role, but it was a very full-on role, and I was sort of doing the 14 hours a day, and I knew that wasn't, you know, really sustainable as well. You know, I was lucky that I got a headhunter call in terms of the opportunity arising. So I think that sometimes there can be that mismatch between, you know, what your instinct's telling you and the opportunity arising.
Can I comment as well? I just think that what Michael said about actually understanding what it is that your skill set is what's important. It's not about the specifics of the work necessarily that you're doing, but about being able to identify what it is that you bring at a higher level in terms of what you've taken responsibility for, perhaps, whether you've managed a team, whether you've managed to take projects through from the beginning to end. If you can identify those rather than the specifics of developing a process for coming up with the embedded value, then that is something that you can explain when you want to make a change into a new area. So I think thinking about it a little bit differently. However, I won't take the microphone. Any more questions, please? Go on, Mark. You had to. You were set up for it.
Question for both speakers. You've been sort of in the non-core insurance industry in this wider field, but you come with a sort of strong actuarial technical background. But it seems to me actuaries sort of have this great technical advantage, but you get put into a position of leadership or running a team or developing a new field where you really, that doesn't give you all the depths and advantages. And I just wondered, what's your sort of general advice to people that are going into these sort of wider fields in terms of what general management skills you need to learn and imbue and build on, that I think probably as actuaries were probably underweight compared to the average management manager. Any thoughts on that, Michael?
You go first.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with your comment that people skills becomes absolutely critical going into those management positions. And there's certain aspects of people skills. There's the managing people, there's the leadership. The one that really stands out to me, and the other one is actually presentation skills as well, is something that you can really consciously work on. But the one that is really sort of apparent is the what I would call stakeholder management skills. So you go into a big bank and, it's just huge, and you've got to work out the structure, you've got to work out their strategy, what matters to the bank, how to influence people. There's a whole myriad of, stakeholder management capability that you need to develop. So it's very different from working for a, Towers Perrin or Tillinghast, where you're working for a client and you're sort of doing what they ask you to do all the time, and you've just got to manage the relationship with your client. There's a lot of complexity there.
Remarkably similar list, I would have said. People management skills. And in most large organisations, my experience, I've worked in a couple, there's no shortage of opportunities if you want to stick your hand up and get involved and have an organisation help you develop your people leadership. So it's certainly true in the Commonwealth Bank. So, that's a core skill set in any role once you get to a certain level. Communication skills, mandatory, whether that's amongst your peers, whether it's to your team, whether it's to your boss. Some people do that naturally. Other people aren't as strong, but it's something, again, there's no shortage of, on-the-job or programs that most corporates would make available. And in a large organisation, the ability, Nick called it stakeholder management, I call sort of influencing skills, because in large organisations, as most of you probably do work, apart from the CEO, no one really runs the whole thing because it's divided up in a very matrixed way. So, to get results, even though, you might have your business and the scorecard and the profits that you're being managed, you can only get there by actually building constructive relationships with people across the business and jointly working together. And, you got to develop, good collaborative and skills to A, help people, but actually also be able to influence people to do what you need to do in your business. So. I should say Mark was I was a scholarship at university, and coming in doing work experience with Towers Perrin, Mark used to babysit me a little bit. And yeah,
I think you learnt more than I knew in the first month or so. Just a follow-up question, just with the Australian banks are really enormous, dominant vehicles in the financial landscape now. I think when I started my career, AMP and National Mutual and were the biggest financial institutions, and now they're really dwarfed. So where do you see the big banks going longer term and strategically and structurally? And maybe specifically with a lot of fintech startups, do you see likely parts of value chain to be broken up by fintech disruption?
It's, your reflections about what was the big six, and then became a big four and a smaller two, and then really just the disparity in the four big banks versus almost any other financial institution in the country has been staggering over the last 20 or 30 years. But look, now you're at a point where you say, look, some of the forces may be pulling in the opposite direction around the fintechs, and there's certainly opportunity for parts of, the industry to be disrupted there. It's a very serious a threat that we take pretty seriously at Commonwealth Bank around. It's both an opportunity as well to lead in the technology, but also the opportunity for fintechs and other nimble players to pick off little bits of your lunch. I still think one of the key things that the banks have got going in their favour is, just the size of the customer, base and the relationships and the scale of the businesses, are in a pretty unique position, and so I think where the threats are coming, and as you alluded to, are in pockets of the value chain rather than a more holistic sort of people taking the core banking customers. I think we've also seen the in the funds management space. You know, just the sort of the rise originally of all the fund managers got bigger and took over each other. And in the last 10 years, obviously, the whole, you know, the growing of the boutiques and people doing, you know, their stuff, you know, which I think is a totally different industry in a banking sense, because it's pretty hard to go out as a, you know, a boutique and set up your own bank. So I think some of the things that play to the core banking strength is scale matters, investment in technology matters, having a brand matters, and having a strong customer base matters.
I just have a couple of comments. On the disruption, I saw a statistic that says something like 30-35% of payments, you know, could be at risk from the bank's point of view, in terms of, you know, new fintech or technology disruptors. And I attended the TED conference in Vancouver this year, and it does open your mind to, you know, what's possible. And now, having said that, I'm still a bit bearish, or still actually more in favour of the banks maintaining a position of strength. And I do think that the world will look a bit different. And we've seen with NAB selling off the, you know, MLC Life, you know, that maybe the wealth components of the banks will maybe look a bit different. But I just reflect on my own experiences in this disruption space. So I've actually been I've had my Gmail account hacked into a couple of times and my Uber account hacked into. I've had somebody take 9 rides in Nigeria on my Uber account and I've changed the password on that 3 times. You know, I'm on my 3rd credit card for the year. You know, I've had, you know, umpteen, you know, problematic transactions, credit card transactions go through. So, and at the same time, I see the bank taking my security very seriously, to the point of being a pain when they phone me up the whole time asking for, you know, is this transaction correct? I guess if I had to, you know, go either way, I would personally say that I think the banks will, you know, maintain a position of strength, and that maybe some of those estimates of the disruption might be overstated, but you know, it's just more of based on the sample of one, just having a bad go of it.
You've now positioned yourself as a bad risk, you know.
Too much online shopping.
Well, I didn't say that. Another question?
Thanks. My question was more about, I guess, the cultural shift in a way, because you both talked about Colonial First State when you first joined being very separate to CBA, but kind of over time you guys moved more closely into it. So I was just wondering what kind of surprised you in positive and negative ways as that, I guess, cultural shift happened and how that played into your careers.
Yeah, so there was a huge cultural shift in the sort of Colonial First State CBA dynamic. So when I joined Colonial First State, the bank was very, it still had, in my mind, quite a public sector mentality. There was the jokes about the cardigan wearing. It was very siloed, and we were very separate. And I reflect on that by saying, you know, if somebody said, where do you work? I always said Colonial First State. I didn't mention the bank. It was almost an embarrassment. And then fast forward 14 years, and you know, and this is really a credit to Ralph Norris, I think, and, you know, more recently, Ian Narev. The cultural change that happened was, in my mind, nothing short of phenomenal. It became an exciting place to work. It was a, you know, leading institution. And now the GFC and how sort of the big banks fared out of that was a big contributor to that. But by the time I left and somebody said to me, where do you work? I would often say Commonwealth Bank and not say the Colonial First State bit. So, you know, completely switched.
A couple of my reflections on the differences. I found it, I spent the first 12 years of my career in intermediated business with intermediated distribution. And then when I was in the bank and you talk about the customer and you look at it through that lens, like that took some while getting used to. And it sounds like really basic, but you know, I'd found both in the insurance and certainly my time in Colonial First, it was all through advisors or, you know, agents, and you know, just the different mindset and the culture coming into a retail bank where, you know, you basically, apart from the business that comes through the brokers, you know, you've got a direct relationship with the customer and you've got direct distribution was a big shift. The other thing I found that the banks, you need to tweak the levers a bit more. It's longer-term business in insurance and funds management was my observation of that. You know, you'd think the decisions you'd take, they would, you know, play out over years, whereas in the banking industry, you know, they need to make decisions, whether it be on the credit or the pricing stuff, that would be having an immediate impact in your business, you know, next week or next month, and that you could influence that year's profit result much more significantly than if you're in insurance or funds management. And I found that quite a difference in mindset and the time frames in which you thought about making decisions.
Okay, thanks. I've got time for another couple of questions. I'll ask a question. I'm interested to know where you see the growth in jobs in banking and what areas you think will be opportunities for people.
Couple of ones off the head. Analytics in banks, whether it be credit-based, pricing-based, huge area of investment that, you know, will be employment growth, and for the profession should, if we're smart about it, people can move into there. Risk management more generally, again, you know, partly driven by the boards, partly driven by the regulator. You know, the bar just keeps getting raised, and I think that's a, you know, an opportunity. And the whole sort of technology space in, you know, banks, I mean, more and more of the cost base in banks is going to go towards, you know, technology, and it's increasingly probably going to be the front end and the digital phase of it rather than the large sort of behind the scenes, you know, technology. I think there are three obvious areas where, you know, net there's going to be employment growth in the banking industry.
Thanks. Got another question? Thanks, Paul.
Observation. Over many years, I found that actuaries have actually been involved, in my experience in the industry, which is sort of 38 years now, have been far more involved in marketing than any of them realised, because pricing is really a marketing function. But in our industry, particularly in the life insurance industry, pricing was done out of the actuarial department. I'm not surprised that you guys translated quite readily through the product side, because you've really been doing some of the core marketing work all the way along. But I used to have this conversation with the actuaries at Zurich and say, you guys are crucial to the marketing in this business. And they were always puzzled as to what I meant by it, because pricing was always separated from marketing, whereas outside of our industry, pricing is usually a central marketing function. Would be interested in your views on that, but I would encourage anybody to not be shy about transitioning into marketing, because you can go in through that door.
I think it's a fair observation. Again, just from a semantics perspective, I guess I would say the product management function, again, in a bank's got pricing in it, and then typically the product management function working very closely with the marketers in terms of how do we, you know, take the product to market. But again, just I'm probably reflecting on it. I don't think we're that different than the bank. There's generally, you know, the product function, which would be working, you know, either have the pricing function embedded within it, or they'll be working very closely, and then, you know, the equally that function working very closely with marketing. But I agree, it's different to some of insurance things, where the pricing function sometimes much more closely back into the finance and actuarial area.
I agree that there is opportunity to go between. And I actually ended up running marketing for the whole of marketing for a bit at Colonial First State, but I actually ran brand and advertising for 2 years, which is a completely non-actuarial area and can be quite frustrating, because it is so much art and so little science. But I did try to bring some, just a little anecdote, I did try to bring some science into it. And I actually engaged Quantium at the time, this was quite a long time ago, to do an analysis. Basically, they built us a model to try and evaluate what the flow impact of our advertising spend was. And obviously, it had to have sort of kind of a lot of factors in there, you know, the market, the number of advisors, the investment returns to try and predict what was driving the flows. And interestingly, out of that, they told us to stop spending on advertising and put all the money into financial advisors at the time. And now that was just before, you know, MySuper was sort of on the card. So, you know, the sort of value of the brand was going to be important in a different context. But, yeah, just so you know that I did do my little bit to bring science into marketing.
Okay, last chance. Okay, thank you for your questions, and thank you both Michael and Nicolette, if you'd like to join me in thanking them. Just stay where you are for a moment. So the things I took out of, the three things I took out of these presentations, which I think were consistent between both Michael and Nicolette: conscious decisions and really taking responsibility for your career and what you want to achieve with it, but also waiting for the opportunities or being prepared and ready to take those opportunities as they arrive. Both have talked about sponsors in their career, people who were important to them, who either advised them or gave them a bit of a leg up. I think making a strong network of people who you can go to and get advice, talk to, and hopefully longer term it's going to pay off in some way or other. And I was really interested in Michael's comment on perceptions, that once you've been in a job for 2 years, people think you know it. You know, they assume that. It's the same as when you first become a fellow, you go to a new organisation and you're there as a fellow, and so everybody just assumes that's who you are. Whereas if you started in a company as a graduate, you know, it's always sometimes quite hard to lose that tag. So I think what came out of that for me was about having courage to take something on, be prepared to put the hard work in and learn, and convince people that really what they see is what they get. So thank you both very much. We're going to have a 10-minute break now, and then we'll be back for the next plenary.